You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 304 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and it was pointed out to me this week that I probably should introduce myself a little bit more for anybody that's a new listener. I am the editor-in-chief, so to speak, over at PeachtreeHoops.com, and also, of course, the host of this podcast, right at a couple of other places as well, including Dimebag over at UpRocks, according to some national NBA stuff. But for the purposes of this podcast, Peachtree Hoops is my home, and I cover the Atlanta Hawks on a daily basis. So here we are to talk about the Atlanta Hawks as usual here on this Monday evening into Tuesday for episode 304. And a couple of news things to hit on. It's going to be sort of a bullet point kind of podcast, as there's not really one central theme, but a few different things to hit on, some mailbag questions to address, and even a 2018 NBA draft checkup at the end of the show. But the first thing I actually hit only a few minutes after I recorded last night's podcast, the late night show on Sunday after the Hawks lost to the Knicks in New York. I, of course, was not there on the scene for this one, but Dennis Schroeder was benched famously. We discussed that on yesterday's podcast quite a bit when it comes to Schroeder not playing the final 8:14 of the game at the expense of Isaiah Taylor and some other alignments for the Hawks. You know, it's always noteworthy when the leading scorer on the team and the player that most assume would be the best player on the Hawks coming into the season did not play the final 8 minutes, 14 seconds, despite being healthy and not in necessarily, I mean, he was in some foul trouble early on in the game, but by that point, he only had 4 fouls down the stretch of the fourth quarter, so that was not really a concern, and that was clearly a benching on the part of Mike Budenholzer, the head coach, in that spot. After the game, Schroeder said the following to the AJC and Michael Cunningham, who covers the team for that paper, and he said, and I quote, "You've got to ask coach and then let me know. I'm supposed to be out there, but it didn't happen, so that's it," end quote. And later on, Cunningham asked him if he would seek out an explanation from Budenholzer, and Schroeder responded with, and I quote, "I will just wait until he comes to me," end quote. So this is not one of the situations where he was putting Budenholzer on full blast, but for me, the things that jumped out to me was the quote that says that he is, quote-unquote, supposed to be out there. That's just, there's some entitlement with that in the minds of Schroeder. I will say that, you know, as the best player, quote-unquote, the most prolific player at the very least, offensively, most of the time that guy's not going to get benched, but I don't think Schroeder's reached that point where he's unassailable in terms of having to play down the stretch if he's not playing well. We talked about this a bit on yesterday's podcast. There were two competing pieces that were written, neither one by me, but one by Graham Chapel on PeachtreeHoops.com. I would encourage you guys to read that, basically argued for why the benching did make some sense at various points because of Schroeder's defensive issues and the fact that he was not giving great effort. And then Michael Cunningham, as I mentioned before from the AJC, actually wrote that he was a little bit more confused by the decision that Budenholzer did. More so, and reading between the lines there from Michael, some timing issues. I think he was pointing out probably correctly that there were some worse defensive performances in this particular game earlier on in the spot, and then the timing of him being benched at that particular moment was a little bit strange. But at the same time, I think it's definitely reasonable to think if you're Mike Budenholzer that in addition to sending a message to Dennis Schroeder, you might want to just be better and more sound defensively, and he can be maddening on that end of the floor. So there are arguments on all sides of it, but one thing is for sure, and that Schroeder does not seem particularly happy with the benching. Not a big surprise there, of course, because he's a very confident guy. I talked about that a lot on the podcast in the past, but Dennis is someone who, for better or worse, believes that he's probably better than he is, and that's probably a quality that you want in a player. But at certain points, you know, he can probably have a little bit of an inflated sense of what he actually is as a player right now, and it could sort of leak into this to the discourse here when you're talking about him being benched at the end of a basketball game. A couple of mailbag questions that we got about this. One came from Andrew, and it was a sort of the same question that we've gotten a few different times. But he basically asks, "Is there any chance that we trade Dennis Schroeder before the end of the season, aka before the trade deadline in February?" I would say that there is a chance. I would say it's unlikely, only because in-season trades, you know, barring Dennis coming to the team and asking for a trade, which would not be entirely shocking to me and other people, I would say. I'm not predicting that by any means, but, you know, we've seen enough of that in the recent past of the NBA to know that those trade requests do happen every once in a while. Still, It's one of those things where I think it's definitely unlikely that the Hawks would trade Schroeder. I will say that if you ask me whether they would move him over the next couple of years, I would lean towards yes on that. I don't think Schroeder is the kind of no-doubt franchise point guard for the Hawks, and we kind of don't know how Travis Schlenk feels about Dennis Schroeder. It's important to point out that he was not Schlenk's guy. The extension that he got was in the previous era, so something to just keep an eye on there. And you know, if Bud sort of falls out of favor with Dennis, which is not necessarily the case, and we talked about this on yesterday's show as well, but this is not the first time that Schroeder's been benched down the stretch of a game. It also happened to Jeff Teague, so it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the writing is on the wall for Schroeder and Bud to have some sort of a falling out here. At the same time, though, yeah, it's one of those things where it would not blow me away, but I would certainly not predict him being traded before the end of this season. And the next question comes from Hogan Brock, who asks, what are the pros and cons of trading Dennis Schroeder? I will say this, his value around the league would not be terribly high right now. You know, I think he's probably appropriately paid or somewhere around there. You know, I've argued on behalf of that contract extension that he signed as a reasonable one, you know, about $16 million a year or so. That's about the going rate for a starting point guard, and he's sort of been that. You know, defensively, you like to see him try a little bit harder, but you're locking him in for his prime, at least his prime years that you would expect his prime years to be, given his age. So there is that, but at the same time, there's not really a whole lot of teams around the league, if you look around, that need point guards, at least in terms of long-term options, because the teams that needed point guards, most of them drafted one last year. There are a couple teams. Obviously, the Bulls jump out to you, but of course, they just invested in a huge trade to net themselves Chris Dunn, so they might still believe in that. The Phoenix Suns need a point guard pretty badly, but those are kind of the only two, you know, obvious options. A lot of the teams that are struggling still have options for the long term. You know, the Kings have De'Aaron Fox, for instance. There are teams that have, you know, there are teams that have these guys that you might not love, but they're probably their point guard of the future, at least by proxy at this point in time. So if you look to trade Schroeder, you have to find the perfect partner, especially if it's in season, that you have to match salary. The Hawks do not have, most teams don't have a lot of cap space right now, including the Hawks. So you have to get close enough to match some salary. That's tough to do unless you take back some bad salary, and I'm not sure the Hawks want to do that. So those would be the cons. The pros would be to sort of clear the decks. If you don't believe that Schroeder is the long-term answer at point guard, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to have him around. I will say your team would be pretty ugly. It would be a pretty good tanking move. Just offensively, I don't think that the Hawks have enough firepower without Schroeder. You could argue that his defensive lapses this year could outweigh that, honestly. But at the same time, like, it's just difficult to move a guy like that in the middle of the season, especially. I know you're already kind of bad, obviously, on the court right now. And in fact, the Chicago Bulls won on this fine evening. So with that said, the Hawks now are not even in sole possession. The Bulls now are not in sole possession of last place in terms of the tanking race. The Hawks and the Bulls have the same exact record. So not exactly great there. If you were to move on from Schroeder, it wouldn't send the best message in the world. We can move on from Dennis Schroeder, but obviously this is going to be a point of conversation really the entire season, I would expect, just because he's a lightning rod player, and if he's benched again or if something happens where he and Bud get into it a little bit on the sidelines, you can read between the lines, all that fun stuff. A lot of drama to be had here in the last 55 games or so this season, and plenty of time to talk about Dennis Schroeder. Before we move on to the rest of the podcast, I do want to remind you guys on this show to please subscribe and rate and review the podcast. Wherever you would like to do so, I would recommend Apple Podcasts. It's where I listen to my podcast, but you know, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, all those fun spots, as well as PeachTreeGroups.com is a good place. They host every episode of the podcast on our host site of Megaphone. And check that out as well. Tell your friends about the entire network as well. If you like a particular, you know, NFL team, we're branching out into the baseball realm as well. But, first and foremost, please subscribe and tell your friends about this podcast and do so. We really appreciate that in a big way. The rest of the podcast is going to be sort of newsy in that way. John Collins was upgraded officially to questionable for Tuesday's game, or tonight's game, as you're listening to this, against the Cleveland Cavaliers on the road. For me, I'd be a little bit surprised if he played, but just the formal announcement that he was upgraded is a very encouraging thing that sort of puts him on track to, you would imagine he'll be returning Thursday, if not Tuesday. Thursday's a home game. That might make a little bit more sense to me in some ways, but at least the possibility is out there that he could play in the game on Tuesday. That's a lot of fun. Also, a lot of people were asking about Mike Muscala. This will be his 18th consecutive missed game on Tuesday night, as he's already been ruled out by the Hawks in terms of their official injury report. That's a very, very long time. It's pretty strange. And absolutely no one would have expected him to miss this much time. He's not played since November 3rd, and he's been out since November 5th. With that sprained ankle, I asked for an update last week, talked about this on the podcast a little bit, but I was basically given an extensive non-answer for Budenholzer, basically like, we'll give you guys an update when it comes. You know, there was some rumblings he could be, you know, able to return. That was a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, I think they're just trying to get Muscala 100% healthy, and for whatever reason, there's been some sort of roadblock with the ankle. I don't know. I don't have any inside info on that. It's just one of those things where you expect him to be back sooner than this. You know, he's also available on the Road Tripping podcast. You guys should check that out as well if you want to talk and hear about, you know, sort of various things, basketball and otherwise, from Muscala and Kent Bazemore, but not a whole lot of talk about his injury there, as you might expect. So I'm not sure when Muscala will be ready. People ask me that all the time. It'd be a great time to have him around right now because the team is so shorthanded. You know, he had sort of been displaced in some ways when Collins and Dedmon were both healthy, but without him, without them healthy, it's been kind of a rough time for Muscala. People that support him, I'm definitely a fan of his game, and I think he can be a useful NBA player. At the same time, this is not great, and 18 consecutive games is certainly a little bit strange for me in some ways. Elsewhere, briefly, I got a question from Joe White saying he's heard that it can be portrayed as bad when a team trades away a player that they just signed. So he is asking if that could affect any chance to get the most possible for guys like Dwayne Dedmon and Luke Babbitt. Not a big surprise here that this has been coming up. I would say that it would not be a bad thing, especially because the Hawks are a bad team. If they're a better team, you might not love this, but you know, most players don't want to lose. So I don't think if you were sending Dedmon most places or sending Babbitt most places that they would be too upset by this. You know, Mike Muscala, for instance, is another guy. He might be more upset because he's a homegrown player. Also has a no-trade clause, so you have to actually approve any kind of trade like that. But in general, it's not great, especially if you're signing a guy to a big long-term contract to trade them right away from an optics perspective. And the Hawks do seem to take that into account, at least in previous years, with trades to kind of free guys and give them more playing time. You know, Mike Scott, Shelvin Mack, to name two. But with Dedmon or Babbitt or even Ilyasova, that kind of guy, I'm sure they probably wouldn't be quite as upset to get out and potentially be added to a playoff contender. So I don't think it would necessarily affect the return. I do think Dedmon specifically, because he has the player option, could be a little bit interesting. But I think at this point, you know, barring some more flare-up of the injury, with the way he was playing before the injury, he was certainly going to opt out of that $7 million from next year because I think you would expect to get more than that on the open market. You know, it kind of depends on how he plays after he comes back from the injury. But if it's anything close to where he was playing early on in the season, he's worth more than $7 million a year, and you'll probably see him opt out either way and become a free agent. So, you know, those guys will be talked about quite a bit between now and February, but I don't think it necessarily is bad form to trade any of those guys, given that they're all in short-term contracts, and the Hawks are, as we talked about extensively, struggling quite a bit this year. Last thing on the podcast for today, people were asking me a little bit about the NBA draft. This is a question I field quite a bit. I know it's sort of a fluid situation right now because the college basketball season is taking place, but just going to kind of revamp my draft board a little bit here. A lot's changed since I talked about this last, specifically in the offseason. So for me, it's a pretty clear top three with Luka Doncic, Marvin Bagley, and DeAndre Ayton in some order in that top three, and then a little bit of a break between that and Michael Porter, who is a solid number four for me, and then another little break before you get to Mo Bamba, the Texas big man, at number five. That's all subject to change. I will say the order is exactly what I just said. For me right now, I would take Doncic with the number one overall pick, followed by Bagley, followed by Ayton, then Porter, and then Bamba. Doncic is going to be a hot-button topic. I talked about this a little bit on Twitter this week. I think just because of the fact that he's a European guard, you have not seen a whole lot of those guys come over and have huge success. It's going to be a lot of pushback from people that have not seen him play, candidly. A lot of fan base will just dismiss him out of hand. I will say this, though. If you look at his numbers, they're the best of any player his age, really, in European history. If you're looking at guys who are coming over to the draft, he's been absolutely fantastic. You know, Eurobasket All-Tournament team, all that stuff. He's averaging 18, 6, and 4 in 27 minutes a game at the best league outside of the NBA in the entire world. His shooting's been very efficient, 48, 35, 86 shooting. Still 18 years old. You know, his passing, his basketball IQ are sort of off the charts. He's a really good rebounder for his size. The jumper looks good to me. There's some you know, smoothing out that will probably need to happen in the future with Doncic's jumper. But the only big question is his athleticism. That will basically determine whether he's going to be an absolute superstar or whether he's just going to be a good NBA player. I think his floor is good NBA player, which is what you want with the number one overall pick. You know, obviously that's a little bit of a disappointment if you just get a very, very solid, good starting NBA player for a long time at number one overall. But if that's your floor, it's probably a very good thing, unless you have somebody else that would just blow you away elsewhere. You know, Marvin Bagley from Duke and DeAndre Ayton from Arizona, both capable of overtaking Doncic with some strong play here. I'd argue that both those guys have higher upsides, ultimately, if everything went perfectly, just because of the fact that they have more athleticism, more just bigger size, all that stuff, explosiveness. Both are just kind of off-the-charts athletes and been very productive. You know, Bagley and Ayton both averaging about 21 and 11, 21 and 12 this season with 61% shooting on both counts and PERs north of 30 at the college level. That's huge. Both guys are great athletes. Bagley is a little bit more of a tweener of a 4-5. I think he's probably a center, ideally at the NBA level, but Ayton is definitely a center. He's a legit 7-footer with a 7'6 wingspan. He's definitely a center. You know, his rip protection has been up and down this year, to say the least. But I think he just needs to be probably broken in a little bit defensively and kind of taught better habits. He's never had to defend necessarily at this level the way that he's being asked to at Arizona. It's been very evident in that way. Bagley's been a little bit better, but his defensive ceiling is not nearly as high. He's not as long as Ayton, and he's not necessarily a natural five. I do think with the Hawks' perspective, the Bagley-Collins combo would be very interesting because neither one of those guys is a pure five, you wouldn't say, but I think both of them ideally would be fives. They could certainly play together, but they would probably need one of those guys to shoot a little bit better from the perimeter than they do now, and at least one of them to be a better rim protector than they are now. I wouldn't shy away from that, though. If you think Bagley's the best player, you just take him. As for Ayton, I think Ayton and Collins is probably even less of a great fit just because I'm still in the mind that Collins is a center. But, you know, still, those guys are pretty clearly 2 and 3 for me in some order. And then you get into Porter and Bamba. Porter, some people thought he was a number one guy overall before he actually missed this entire season with injury. I was never quite there. I thought he was in that mix for that top 3 or 4 spots. For me, the injury makes him a little bit more risky. That places him in a solid 4. You know, if the medicals check out all the way through and you want to have him a little bit higher than that, I have no issue. If everything went perfectly, he'd be a great stretch 4 option. I'm not 100% sold on the defense and all that stuff, but he's a very, very smooth scorer, looks very good on that end of the floor. His offensive talent is certainly considerable, and that would be a very nice fit if all went according to plan at the 4 spot in the future. And Mo Bamba at number 5, sort of a defensive-minded player, 7'9 wingspan, absolute freak on that end of the floor. Offensively, a little bit slow to develop. It actually has a decent-looking jump shot. Could be a toolsy player on the offensive end, but if you're drafting Bamba, it's about the defensive impact potential. He's averaging 4 blocks a game, even though I'd probably argue he's been a little bit disappointing defensively, which is a weird thing to say back-to-back when you're averaging 4 blocks a game in the Big 12. But if anything, he's an impressive prospect, but I think he's certainly behind those top 4 guys in terms of what I'd be looking at, even probably closer to that 6-7 level with Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, a couple of other guys. So I'll be updating this as we kind of go here, but people keep asking me, so I wanted to refresh this a little bit if you're a new listener. That'd be the way that I break it down right now. But if all things were equal and the Hawks were drafted number 1 today, I would take Luka Doncic. And, you know, it's not this massive gap, but I think he's a fairly safe number 1 for me right now. It could change, but I'm blown away by his talents and his basketball IQ, and that's going to be the end of that for today's podcast. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody. We'll definitely be back with a recap show tomorrow after the Cleveland game. And, you know, subscribe to the podcast, do all those fun things, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.